sex in any bundle, you have to pay at least $53 a month.
Yeah, there was somebody you dabbled with, the station that was talking, maybe he can repeat it.
Yeah, it was just me, AC2GS. I was just saying that these things are, it's easy to confuse. If you're not familiar with Blender and you mentioned that it's a graphic program, it's not just a graphic program. A 2D graphic program are things like Photoshop. This is a 3D graphics design program.
Yeah, I was using so many programs. I was using Blender, I was using much simpler Cabri, C-A-B-R-I, Cabri. That was much simpler, and there was also 3D program, but Blender is absolutely amazing and it's free. Let me jump.
Yeah, what do you know about Adobe After Effects?
Absolutely nothing. When I was interested to buy Adobe, I was the user of Sony Vegas at that time. And people would start to drop from Adobe, and they were complaining that they were spending $300, $400 per month, and it's a crappy program, while you have DaVinci Resolve for free. And at that time, DaVinci Resolve dropped the price for its studio version from $1,000 to $299. The secret of why the DaVinci Resolve is a killer is they were buying a module. So they have a Fairlight. Fairlight was a very, very sophisticated company inside, in sound. And they were doing system for $300,000, $400,000, $1,000,000.
Facts. But, you know, to start with Adobe After Effects, you have to pay $53 a month for the entire creative suite. You can't just rent Adobe After Effects.
Yeah, that's correct. So what I'm saying is it doesn't pay. You have everything in DaVinci Resolve. You don't have to pay anything, one single penny. Once you paid, I paid $299 maybe 6 years ago, and I still have it. They had a hardware keys for it, now they have a software keys. And there is one thing. If you buy a Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera, any camera, that would be 2K, I mean that would be 4K, that would be 6K or the Pro version, you're getting a software for free. Now, because I have it, and I bought another camera, I don't use it. So people try to sell it for $100. So instead of paying $299, you can go to eBay and you can find it for $100. Because sometimes people bought two, three cameras, or they bought the program first and then the camera, and now they have unused versions, so they rather sell it. So that's the way to get studio for less money.
Well, now I'm using existing footage. The existing footage from years ago, 1080p. Most of it was from a Canon EOS 5D Mark II. And I will somehow decide what to do about upgrading camera in the near future.
What are you looking for? Mostly in film. If you're looking at there were mirrors, mirrorless. Change to mirrorless from historic. Europe. Now only at 2016 we start to see mirrorless cameras that actually started to be purchased in 2021. So now everything is about mirrorless cameras.
Yeah, but mirrorless camera doesn't have the viewfinder that a camera with a mirror has. You know, if you want to look through a little port in the back of the camera, you know, you have to attach something to it.
Well, look, the viewfinder is for the people who are really easy using glasses, or people who really want to have the best sharpness, and mostly for photography. Panasonic was using the 200 version camera. It's called 200, actually, and then 300 version camera. 300 cameras were about $13,000. The 200 version camera is about right now $9,800. While a Blackmagic camera with full features, what is it? I forgot the model number. Is I have to check it out. But it's about $5,000. So we're talking about a quality that is equal or better than the cameras for $50,000 or $29,000, and we can buy it for $5,000. So the market is really in pain. Everybody is losing money because of Blackmagic, but everybody buys Blackmagic, and Blackmagic actually goes like crazy. And to XGA.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, Wesley, I have a $600 street view camera. It's a wide-angle camera. It's very small, and it's 1080p. And video is 1080p. I think that's all I'll ever need. You know, 4K is great, but, like, you know, go on the internet and see how many 4K videos there are, and, you know, how you can view them on YouTube.
Even let's say you have a camera 6, it has an option for can separately, but okay. So that would be your choice, because it has a tilted screen. So this camera has a tilted screen, so you can take it over your head or below your knees, and you can still make a shot on it. But it's not a still picture camera. So whatever you're looking for, if you're talking about Panasonic S1H, or you're talking about a Sony FX3, then you're expecting that, okay, that camera has this actual RAW format that I'm looking for. Because RAW, that's what would give you the best possible quality. That's it.
Well, you know, Wesley, I made a movie with capture from 8mm, standard 8mm, film, you know, and it looks, I think the resolution was 640 by 480 pixels, but, you know, it looked good, so, like, maybe the idea is to create something that is different or somehow altered from what people are used to seeing all the time.
Not features, but I'm looking at DC G5. That was very much a popular camera, especially because people could do the tilted screen that could actually flip, so you could be in front of the camera and you could see yourself in the screen. So GH4, there was GH5, then it's GH5S, and if you compare it to Blackmagic Casino Camera 6K, then you see that 6K is mostly for movie, and Panasonic can do both. It can take the pictures, and great pictures, and it can take the clips, but it doesn't have a RAW.
QSL, QSL. Liveshot 4K with my phone. Looks really good. You know, wide angle street view and some other thing, you know, where even the frame of the video, it doesn't take up the whole frame of the screen, you know. I guess the question is, how can you mess it up and make it look good?
A few words. If you're talking about a camera that built in its lens, this is not a professional camera. It's a joke. Yeah, it has a wide view, whatever, it's a joke. The professional camera use a different lens for different application. And also those lens certain amount of tweaks with the picture. So a question is your camera having a built-in lens, and what is the range for it?
82 NXA.
Yes, Sam.
Wesley and David, good conversation, but nobody really understands. I was tuned in to hear TechNex about how we did today at field day, and I didn't hear anything. So I just want to know, Roy, that if you're not going to talk about it, I'm going to shut it down and go to bed.
Okay, Sam. We sort of tried to talk about field day earlier tonight. Paul mentioned his field day. Frank from Philadelphia on Echolink mentioned his field day. There wasn't a lot of response. I'm thinking because, you know, some of the guys who really put their all into field day are probably tuckered out and sleeping it off.
Okay, thank you. They can carry on now. I just want to know. I was reading them. They sent me a note that on 40 and 60, it was almost dead, and they didn't have any contact at all. So I don't know if it was really that popular for communicating, you know. But all right, thank you, Roy, and thank you to the next. I'm going to take 73 on your pilot.
I'm not quite sure if you got that note right. I don't think anyone really alludes to 60. 60 is a very small channelized specialty band. It might mean 40 and 80. 40 was pretty lively, at least here in Brooklyn, and what I hear from Paul and even from Frank in Philadelphia, 40 was lively, 20 had some activity, 80 got livelier as the night progressed. 10 meters was kind of dead, though. The higher frequencies haven't really gotten the propagation conditions that we were hoping for. So there was a lot of activity. I was watching it on my pan adapters and on 20 and a lot on 40 and a little on 80. But I'm told as the night progressed, 80 got busier and busier.
Okay, yeah, Steve wrote me, he said, 40 and 50 stations, we put going up to 60 or so over CW guys. I got on a hot streak with 80 and 40. We count a few big guys, around 4:30 and 5:30 band, really declined and faded completely. So it wasn't that strong, not like, it's not our fault. I'll feel that they're good, you know, in the program and everything. It's just nobody probably was out there. All right, thank you, Roy.
KG2R1.
David, West, if you want to continue what you were talking about.
That's my mark, you too.
Yeah. Just a few words. Black Magic put on the market okay. At the beginning of the television, we had 60, then we had 480, then we had 729, then we had 10 feet. at 12K. So over $10,000 for the camera. The Blackmagic dropped it to the price of $5,000, $5,200, I believe. So, Ursa 12K camera, enter
XGS. QSL, QSL. Yeah, I use a point and shoot street camera, built in wide angle lens, I think the equivalent of 28 millimeters. I have a EOS 5D Mark II with 35 millimeter lens and a 24 to 105 millimeter zoom. And I use my phone, and I think I get really good results. Why is it that a person has to do things the way everybody else does? Maybe there's some other way, I think.
Yeah, it depends for the purpose. If you're doing a video for your family, you can use the phone. If you're using doing it for commercial, you have to use some kind of professional camera. And the lens actually is for you to give you the width of the area that you're actually filming. So 15 millimeters or 17 millimeters is actually for the close view. And that actually gives you very, very much shallow background. So if you, let's say, you want that background to be invisible, but you are to be in the center of something that is blurry, yes, you can use it. And then actually Sigma put the lens that is 18 to 35, and I have it. And that's an amazing lens. And that could be used with any one of film cameras, also with my Blackmagic Pocket Cinema Camera 6K. And I was using it with EVA 1 from Panasonic too. It is a great lens. So great lens are always stay with you, the cameras. Because 50 millimeters is universal. But sometimes people cannot afford to have just lenses, so they want to have a very focal. And the very focal is good if that view is always in focus. So when you're changing the zoom, you're not losing the picture. It's always sharp. And then the next one is overhead. So if you have lenses millimeters, you can do anything you want it's one time investment.
Wesley, I want to tell you something. I've made animations with video at all.
Okay, so it's the time for Space Report, Dr. Roy.
Okay, gentlemen, let's just see if I have the receiver, because it's whistling and talking. Let me drop for a second.
Life, ID.
Well, I don't think we're going to get an ID. I'll give you mine, AC2GS. Anyway, want to thank everyone for their discussion. Cameras are interesting subjects. They range in price from very, very reasonable low price to ridiculously expensive professional. Can be somewhat simple, very complicated and free, and very expensive. Nevertheless, let me remind everyone that if you have anything that you want to send me via email, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you want to email Paul, that's spacenet.com. Once again, the link page, when it goes back up, is going to be at royac2gs.com with some interesting... And the audio stream is technet.com. And, of course, mikekc2njr's greatamateurradio.tv archive site that archives the technical net as far back as 2006. And if you hear a signal that doesn't belong there, please inform, email your information to rfi@limark.org. And it's time for Paul and the Spaceman Report.
AC2GS, WS2N. Very good. Yeah, we don't have much traffic for this evening, but, you know, a couple of good little stories. One is this group in Japan is developing a robot that's going to be able to drive on the moon. So hopefully when we start landing there in 2025 with the SLS system, one of the robots they'll be able to bring along is this thing. It's pretty tall. It looks like about 5 feet tall, and it's got four legs, but at the end of each leg is a wheel. And they had a video on the for a demonstration of this robot. It's made by a group called GITAI, and it's called R1 for Robot One. But this has the capability of driving around on the moon in all kinds of different fashions, and it's got two arms with a very dexterous hands that can put things together, take things apart, put a tower together with an antenna on the on top of it. They showed that demonstration that was being done. What happens is there's a person operating it remotely, and you know, theoretically he would probably be on the space station, and the robot would be on the moon putting antennas together, putting solar panels together, unboxing solar panels, and pretty impressive video. So I think next week when Dr. Roy's website is up, maybe I'll send it over and you can click on that video. It's only a 5-minute video, but they show it going. It can go up grades, or you could do excavation to see if there's, you know, looking for different minerals or hydrocarbons or whatever they want to look for. But they've come a long way with this robotic situation, and now heading to the moon eventually. But it's one of the competing groups. There's a couple of others that are also competing. So thought I'd bring that up. But we'll put that on the website next week. Because this thing has great drive mobility. It's, like I said, solar panel assembly, excavation, climbing up and down hills. It's really pretty good, and JAXA, the Japanese organization, will be backing it if this thing is approved. And that's one of the countries that are signed up with Artemis. We have probably about 10 countries now that signed up with the Artemis Accord that will be involved with helping us to get to the moon. And their end, of course, eventually they hope to have an astronaut from their country fly on the SLS eventually. So, you know, everybody gets something out of it, and all the science will be shared. Any comments?
Okay. A while back, it was 2018, there was a spacecraft launch from French Guiana, Kourou, with an Ariane 5 rocket, and that's their heavy lift vehicle. And that's sponsored by the European Space Agency. And they launched two spacecraft together, and they're still stuck together. The idea is to send them both to Mercury. The long-term goal eventually is to put these two spacecraft in orbit around Mercury. And again, they will launch in 2018. They won't be orbiting until probably 2025. But in the meantime, they do flybys of that planet. And a couple of days ago, yesterday they did a flyby of Mercury, the second one that they did. It passed within around 100 miles of the planet, and it took black and white pictures. Right now, the color camera cannot be used because the two spacecraft are stacked together. Why are they stacked together? Well, once they do go into orbit in 2025, after a couple of more of these flybys, they're using the flybys for gravitational deacceleration. Each time they go by, they slow it down by around 2,500 miles an hour. So they have a couple more of these. Eventually, they'll be able to slow down long enough to face the spacecraft in the forward position. You know, the back end in the forward position, ignite the rocket to slow itself down enough to actually go into orbit. And that's when the real science will start for both vehicles. At that point, they'll separate from one another. The European Space Agency will be in a very low orbit, probably maybe 60 to 100 miles above the surface. But the Japanese one will be in a higher orbit, you know, maybe 1,000 miles or so in a higher orbit. And with the two, they'll be able to get different information that the scientists are looking for. So, interesting flight. It's called BEPI Colombo mission. So we'll see how what happens. We'll follow it along. I remember talking about it when it launched in 2018. And the picture that came back was, you know, very clear of the surface of Mercury. And once the two spacecraft are separated in 2025, color camera will be activated. And they'll get extraordinary views of the planet. Now, it's not the first time a spacecraft has orbited Mercury. We had the Messenger spacecraft by NASA did this as well. And they had nice pictures and things that came back. That was many years ago, so the equipment has changed, improved, and the scientific instruments, you know, for spectroscopy and all of that will really help the scientists. You know, I'm fascinated with the idea of going to, you know, how they're going to get to Mercury and how they're going to slow down and, you know, eventually orbit Mercury. But the scientists, that's the main reason for these things to be going. In fact, early flights to the distant planets like Mercury or Venus, the public always wanted a camera on board. The scientists couldn't care less. They weren't interested in pictures. All they wanted was, how many neutrons are being reflected off the surface. That told them things. They were more interested in getting a spectrograph of this surface of planets. And then, you know, eventually Congress, you know, told them, you know, you have to put a camera on board. You know, the public is paying for this. And people understand what pictures are and how important pictures and videos are. As you can tell from the last conversation with Dave and Wesley. Any comments or questions? WS2N.
What is the resolution of the cameras?
I didn't see that. I'll look for it. That's just a site that you get from the internet. So if I click on BEPI Colombo and a PDF file on it or something, that we get a lot of information. They'll probably break down the information on what the resolution is, how many frames per picture. And this is they call it the black and white camera. There's a color camera on there that
of course, it's not operated yet, Wesley, but I'm sure you could eventually find the detail on that as well. Back to you.
And what is the format of compression?
Compression for the pictures that were transmitting back to Earth. Either one, I really don't know, but I mean, there's two different compressions. What are you talking about for the photography itself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to find out for really good quality pictures, they need quite good format of compression. The best one is RAW. It gives you almost wiped from the color pictures, but when you actually put it into a program that is able to maneuver those files, you can get world reach of colors if you want to. But you say the black and white cameras, and the question is, what do you use the black and white cameras for? Is it because of the sensitivity or what?
Well, initial flybys, one, you know, this is the second one, and this one, they went in closer. There was one particular crater that they were interested in, and that showed up. But these are only flybys. They had 45 minutes of investigating the planet before it started, you know, it's in a heliocentric orbit, so you have to wait another few months, I guess. Maybe 8 months or so before it comes back again. So, but you know what you could see? Then what you could do is put this into search, and you'll see the picture that I'm talking about. But it's the Bepi Colombo, B-E-P-I, Colombo, C-O-L-O-M-B-O. And then you put in flyby of Mercury. And put in June 2022, and that one particular picture that I'm talking about will come up. Probably one of the, I think I got mine from NASA, spaceflight.com. Back to you, Wes.
Yeah, I put it right here. So from that, what it looks like, they need a high-speed camera.
Okay. Dropped out there a couple of times. I had a microphone like that one time. I found out it was right at the cord, the cord went into the mic, and anytime I moved my hand around one way or another, that same problem would occur. I'm taking it apart, re-soldering it, and went through heroic means to try to save this microphone. And it worked, but eventually the radio quit anyway, so eventually I wound up with another radio. But it really sounds like a mic problem to me. All right. Resolution, I know scientists were impressed with this particular picture if you read the article. And you can see part of the spacecraft in that picture. But that will all be, eventually separated. Like I said, there's two spacecraft that stuck together. One by the European Space Agency for the low orbit, and one for the Japanese spacecraft for the higher orbit. And, it was a combined mission, and so far, so good. And I'll be anxious to see the quality of the pictures between, these two spacecraft and the earlier one by Magellan. Messenger was the one for Mercury. Magellan is the radar one for Venus. But
satellite is no longer operating. And Messenger was the NASA one. You can put in Messenger pictures for Mercury and you get a whole lot of pictures. One, I think it was in orbit. Back to you.
Yes, I'm looking at the article and it looks like cameras are still picture cameras. It's not the movie. Interaction.
Oh, no, yeah, no, no videos. I don't think they're going to have a video with you. They're not ready for that. But that's coming eventually when they perfect the laser transmissions, not only the moon. There's one that's going to the asteroid belt that's got a laser system on it. Once that's perfected, they'll be able to send video back on a regular basis. They've already experimented. We sent a spacecraft to the moon with the LaCrosse mission, and the one spacecraft sent video back from the moon, from the orbit of the moon on laser. That was an early test, you know, quite a few years ago. But yeah, that's coming down many, many years from now, but you're going to have that on a regular basis. You're going to see live transmissions of people with high quality film, not like what we saw with the Apollo missions, high quality video from the moon someday, not using RF. Any comments?
The camera provides black and white snapshots, 1024 by 1024 pixel resolution. So we're talking 1080p. 1080p is 1920 by 1080. So it's sort of 2K resolution. Now this one is 1024 by 1024, and that is being called high resolution for them. Enter exchange.
Oh, okay, there you go. You go back to Apollo 11, resolution was, I believe it was 120, I think, as low as 120. What happened was the pictures came in and to Australia, and they had it on a screen. And then to get that picture back to Earth, to a NASA, they actually had a camera looking at the screen itself, and by the time it came back to mission control, it was grainy. I remember that, watching it land on the moon on Apollo 11. And originally, they had a camera actually looking at the other camera upside down. They had to flip the whole thing around. First couple of pictures that came back, you know, before Neil Armstrong went down the ladder, the picture was actually upside down. If you waited a little bit, they flipped it. But yeah, look how far we've come. Any other comments? Okay, I mentioned the SLS Space Launch System before, and they've finally completed the what they call the wet dress rehearsal. They call the WDR, wet dress rehearsal. What that means was bring the whole rocket, the space launch system, which is, you know, a core stage, a secondary stage on top of that, and two large solid boosters attached to it, and then on top of the second stage, which is the Orion spacecraft itself, which will eventually carry the astronauts to the moon, to and from the moon. That whole setup had to be tested, had to be rolled out to pad 39B and filled with many gallons of fuel and oxygen, liquid oxygen. Total of 700 750, just over 750,000 gallons of cryogenic liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, all for the core stage and for the second stage. They need to do this without leaks. They need to have all the equipment that's attached to the rocket that eventually pulls away. All these swing arms and everything has to operate properly and without leaks. They tried this a month or so ago. It originally went out in March, and when they did discover a leak in one of the connecting arms that go to the SLS. A couple of other things. They had a valve in the second stage, and a piece of rubber got caught inside the valve, and they couldn't change it at the site, so that had eventually been done back at the vehicle assembly building. They ran all these tests, and they never got a chance to fill it up it went out in March, around April. So they brought it back to the building, made all these corrections. Now this time they brought it out a few weeks ago and back to the same pad, and they've gone through all these same tests. And this time they were much more successful. They were actually able to fill all the way up the 750,000 gallons of fuel and oxidizer. They needed to fill the nitrogen system up. There's other gases that are involved. Everything worked okay. There was one leak they now found on the vent that's actually on a pad, not on a spacecraft itself. That vent's hydrogen that was leaking. They know about that now. But that would not affect the launch itself, but they will, of course, fix that. So now, next couple of days, they'll be bringing that all the way back 4.2 miles from launch pad to the vehicle assembly building. They'll put it all together again and, tighten up whatever they have to do, and eventually send it back out to the pad, and they hope for a launch as early as late August and maybe early September. The idea is to send this is going to be an unmanned spacecraft, but it's a spacecraft just like, if you put a crew inside, they'd be able to go for a ride all the way around the moon and back. This is the first test, one that's done, and the spacecraft Orion comes back and lands successfully in the Pacific Ocean, probably about 10 days after launch. So figure end of September, maybe October. They'll review everything if all is well. Next year they should have the first crew launch to the moon and back, similar to what they did with Apollo 8. Apollo 8 was the first Apollo mission to actually go to the moon with a crew, but they didn't land on purpose. It was a test. In fact, they didn't have the LEM with them. LEM is the landing vehicle. But this one is planned on doing the same thing, going around the moon, coming back, and all is well. And then the next flight will be a moon landing flight, probably the following year, but maybe 2025 is my guess. And that's if everything goes well. Any questions? WS. Nothing heard. NASA made an announcement that they call it the Psyche mission. Psyche will go out to an asteroid with the same name, Psyche. And the idea is to fly there and investigate this. It's a heavy metal type of asteroid. On a small side, I think it's around 140 miles in diameter. But the idea is to fly out there with this thing and investigate it, go into orbit. And that's one that they will have a laser communication system, like I'm talking to Wesley about. And they're going to test that out, transmitting from there, which would be equivalent to transmitting, you know, past Mars, you know, asteroid deltas between Mars and Jupiter. So that'll be a record for laser transmission. And they expect, you know, terabytes of data coming from this mission. And to get those terabytes back, they're going to use this laser communication system. But unfortunately now, it looks like it's going to be delayed. It was supposed to go up in August. They have software problems, and apparently the software problems will not be corrected in time for the planned launch. SpaceX is supposed to launch it on their heavy space flight. They have the Falcon 9 Heavy. That's three Falcon 9 bolted together. They haven't launched one of them in a while. There's about three or four planned this year. But that would be one of them. We'll see how that goes. But now that's going to be delayed. And instead of getting to that asteroid a couple of years from now, it won't be in probably until toward the end of the decade, probably 2028, 29, unfortunately. We'll cover it. We're still here, we'll cover it. WS Select.
KG2RY, go ahead, Dave.
Hello, Paul. Good evening. I've been reading a lot of information about trading stocks and bonds. One of them seems to keep coming up. It's a picture of a missile that is developed by China, and it flew all the way around the world. Do you know about this?
Sounds like you're talking about the hypersonic one that they tested. Flew a little over Mach 5 times the speed of sound. Probably 3,500 miles, maybe 4,000 miles per hour. Is that the one?
Probably. And they were talking about, in terms of trading stocks and bonds, what the USA, what our response was to that.
I don't know what stocks have to do with that. China was trying to develop this hypersonic system. You know, they could put a bomb in the front of it, similar to what Russia's been doing. They've used these things to bomb the Ukraine, and now China's into it. And I can't believe that we don't have something like that, you know, going in. You know, that's not been publicized. I know they worked on it. We had something called the Wave, I think it was we had one, but they launched on a Pegasus rocket, which means they dropped it from Lockheed L-1011 jumbo jet that dropped the Pegasus rocket. And then from there they launched this hypersonic wave flyer, I think they called it. I don't know. Anyway, it failed. They tried it, I think, two or three times. And that was, 12 years ago. They mean to tell me the United States hasn't developed something yet. But, you know, from what I read, we haven't. And that, you know, from what I read, Russia and China is ahead. But what does this have to do with stocks? I mean, as far as I know, there's no company behind it. Sounds like there's just China behind it. Back to you, Dave.
Well, what I gather is that the United States is developing something far more advanced than China and Russia. That means that, you know, for whatever reason, the information isn't available. I think it's called 5G Arrow.
Okay, I don't know it, but I'll research it. And, you know, Lockheed was heavily involved in that. They have the skunk building out west. They develop a lot of, over the years, top secret things have been developed there, stealth fighters and things like that. So it probably has something to do with them. And if it's them, you know, I guess, you know, maybe Lockheed would be the one that people are investing in. Quite a few companies that would, you know, could be doing this. My guess is it's probably Lockheed.
KG2RY. Well, you know, they say something like, China, watch out for Taiwan. What happens to Taiwan could make a big difference in terms of trading. But I'm not sure what that means.
Paul?
Yeah, I don't know what it means either. But, yeah, I hear you, Rory. But by the way, I agree with you, Dave. I bet dollars and donuts we have something that's just not publicized. Roy, over to you.
Yeah, it's developed by Lockheed Martin. It's called an air-launched rapid response weapon. They describe it as a hypersonic weapon planned to be used by the Air Force. The boost glide weapon is propelled to a maximum speed of more than Mach 5 by a rocket motor before gliding towards its target. And the Chinese missile rocket, whatever, I think it missed the place it was supposed to come down by kilometers.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, yeah, if it goes five times the speed of sound, it's called hypersonic, which is, that sounds like it. But I want to bet my last bottom dollar on these things, I'll tell you that. But, you know, Lockheed is one of the companies that you could buy. Lockheed, Boeing. Now, some companies, a lot of space companies, you can't. SpaceX, you can't buy stock with them. So some are privately owned and some aren't. Well, anyway, thanks, Roy. Dave, does that answer your question? Roy had that info.
QSL. But in the information that I get from trading, the name of the device for development by United States in response to China and also to Russia is called 5G Arrow, but I don't know what that means. You know, Vladimir Putin is going to announce a missile, some kind of cruise missile, that could reach the UK from Russia in 3 minutes. You know, this isn't going to be announced till the end of the year.
Okay. Well, good luck with his announcement. I wouldn't put anything past that guy. I think he's a little wound tight, Dave. So. I think he might be under a little bit of stress, too.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I guess you could say that change is inevitable. Change is inevitable. Things don't always work out exactly the way you want them to. Hopefully, you know, in our favor.
Okay, I concur. So, just still want to find out what happened was about a year or so ago, maybe about 2 years ago, there was an explosion in the northern, far northern part of Russia, you know, north of Plyansk is where they launch a lot of military rockets from Russia. But just north of that, there was this big explosion, and a bunch of radiation was released. And there's still a possibility, and they've never disclosed what it is, but the possibility that they were testing one of these hypersonic missiles, and it got out of hand, and there was a bunch of radiation leaked. Now, if you're doing a test, the last thing you want to do is put something that's radioactive on it, so I don't get the connection. Then there's a rumor that they were trying out a radioactive engine of some sort. Anyway, none of it's been confirmed, but, you know, in Putin's world, there hasn't been a true story to come out of that place since he's been there. Anyway, thanks, Dave. Just only have one other topic. Insight, and I think I mentioned this anyway last week. Insight is the vehicle that landed on Mars in 2016. It landed, I think, around 2018. And, you know, it sat there for no wheels, it's just a permanent lander. And the idea was to test the inside of Mars, and they had different ways of doing it. One way was radio communication with antennas, transmitting from Earth to the vehicle itself. And the timing and everything, they knew exactly to, like, within a centimeter of its exact location. They could tell movement of the planet or things like that from radio communication. But they also have a seismometer that they placed on the planet itself. Had a robotic arm, picked it up, put it on a planet. It had a big cover that went over it. Big dome, and that was protected from any little wind. There was very little wind on Mars. They didn't want any wind or dust to get near the seismometers. And they've been detecting Mars quakes. I think around 1,500 little Mars quakes, some bigger than others, all this time. And then they have this heat probe gadget that they tried for a couple of years to, but, you know, bury itself under the ground, 15 feet below the ground. It never made it, like, 6 inches under the ground. And that was it had a heat probe that was going to pull down into a hole with it. So that part failed. But the seismometer worked, and the radio transmissions worked, and they've been getting signs from this every day. But unfortunately, on Mars, you have these winds, storms, light dust that blows around the planet every now and then, and it's covered up these two circular 12-foot each solar panels.
Complete.
And completely covered. I saw a picture. You can barely see the solar panel. They figure they've got, you know, a few months left of operation. They just decided we're just going to keep doing the science, and we're just going to get 3 months, 2 or 3 months more of science out of it before it quits. But that will be the end of Insight. You know, right now it's still successfully transmitting Mars quakes. You know, it picks up the data from the seismometer, transmits up to one of our relay satellites. We have, like, Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter above we could use, or there's another spacecraft by the European Space Agency called Mars Express that's still in orbit around Mars, and we also use that as a relay. And Mars Odyssey as well. And anyway, they transmit signals back on 8 gig to the Deep Space Network.